Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hello, and welcome back to Movie Mike's Movie Podcast. I am your host, Movie Mike, joined this week by my wife and co-host, Kelsey. How are you?
I'm great.
We're going to talk about the best and worst movies, our first best and worst of the year. February, January, we're kind of slow, so we're grouping it all together in the movie review. We'll be talking about Dune Part 2. Which you're not looking forward to because it's almost 3 hours long.
It's very long. And I think I fell asleep during the first Dune.
Dune. Is it worth the runtime? We'll get into that in the movie review. And then in the trailer park, we'll talk about Wicked, which I'm oddly surprised how good it looks. And I just have kind of this weird fascination with anything Wizard of Oz. I'm actually looking forward to it. So we'll talk about that in the trailer park. Thank you for being subscribed. Thank you for listening every single week. Shout out to the Monday Morning Movie Crew. And now, let's talk movies.
I would like to just say, we're recording this.
But I've already begun the intro. What?
I'm the co-host. I can cut you off.
Okay.
We're recording this on Thursday evening. Mm-hmm. I'm going into Dune saying I'm not going to like it.
Okay.
I would love to come back to the movie review and say that I enjoyed it, but I'm putting it out there at the start of this podcast that I'm not looking forward to it.
Okay, hopefully it changes your mind.
And to find out if I liked it or not, you have to listen to the whole episode.
There you go. And now can we talk movies?
Yeah.
Okay, and let's talk movies.
In a world where everyone and their mother has a podcast, one man stands to infiltrate the ears of listeners like never before in a movie podcast. A man with so much movie knowledge, he's basically like a walking IMDb with glasses. From the Nashville Podcast Network, this is Movie Mike's Movie Podcast.
All right, let's get right into it. Like we said earlier, January, February were the dump months of the year, meaning that studios just kind of throw crap at the wall and see what sticks. And I think this year in particular,
It was a lot of crap.
Like, I know sometimes in January we get like a horror movie that ends up being pretty good. I feel like this year, so far, we've had some real bombs out there. Just straight up, not even the worst movies of the year, but the worst movies in a really long time.
I had to think long and hard about what was my favorite.
Well, it's saying a lot when the highest grossing movie so far of the year is The Beekeeper with Jason Statham. It's made $150 million worldwide, which isn't that much.
That's the highest grossing?
That is the highest grossing right now. If all movies were said and done today, the highest grossing movies would be The Beekeeper, Bob Marley, Mean Girls, Argyle, and Madame Web.
That's bad.
So that just gives you the landscape of movies right now. Kick it off with you first. What was the best movie we saw so far this year for you?
Like I said, I had to think long and hard. Mm-hmm. I had to re-examine the list. It would be Self-Reliance.
On Hulu.
Which I didn't even really want to watch.
No, I feel like people are, you either love that movie like we did or you hate it. Because it's about Jake Johnson's character who essentially is playing this dark web reality show where if he can stay alive for 30 days, he wins $1 million.
And this is also not to say I loved the movie. It just is the best out of what we've seen.
See, I ended up really enjoying it.
I liked it. I'm just saying it's not like something that I'm like, you must go out and watch. It is just from the list of things that we saw.
Yeah, I think so far this year, there's not one movie that has implanted itself into my fiber of movie watching that this is a movie I highly, highly recommend. Haven't got there yet.
But I know we saw it on the 30th of December. We talked about it, but like, I wish American Fiction could count because that would be my favorite. But
yeah, we'll see how it does at the Oscars this weekend, I guess.
Okay, that was my favorite. I don't really have much else to say. It was a decent, entertaining movie.
See, that's probably the movie I was most excited to do a review on. And that was also the movie that a lot of people watched and told me, like, you got this one wrong, bro.
I'm more passionate about my worst film of the month.
That's the other thing with streaming movies. They come out and they have about a shelf life of 2 weeks, maybe three.
If that.
Because a movie is like number one for a while. People watch it. There's a little bit of buzz, a little bit of word of mouth, and then they're just gone. For my best of the year so far in the last 2 months, I'm going to go with Sometimes I Think About Dying, which I gave out of five. It was a really good movie. The more I've thought about that movie, the more I was impressed by it. And out of all the movies we've seen so far this year, it's the only movie that's made me feel anything. And I really think it's because of Daisy Ridley's amazing performance in that movie and seeing a completely different side of her. And then also that it was dealing with such a heavy subject, which her character in that movie does what the title says. She thinks about dying, but tries to have a normal life, tries to make connections with people, but struggles to do that because she's socially awkward. She's a really quiet person. But in that kind of depressing premise, it also has a lot of fun moments that we saw in a sold out theater. And there was a lot of people laughing throughout the movie.
I was going to say the socially awkward. Did you relate to that? Did you talk about that?
That was like I've never seen socially awkward portrayed so well in a movie that I was like, that is me. Like, that is how the struggles I have as a socially awkward person, I feel like you either watch that movie and think, I know somebody in my life, or that is me.
I was once told by a boss that I'm socially awkward, and I was offended.
Not
because
at all.
I'm an introvert, but I'll make friends in the post office.
Yeah,
I'm BFFs with the Trader Joe's cashier before we even leave.
You are like, you can go and be very social and talk to people that you don't know. And then, yes, you have your recharge moments where you're just like, I just want to go home. A weekend, we don't go out anywhere. But I feel like you flourish in that social setting as well. Unlike me, where I just
like, I took offense when she said that. And I was like, she wanted me to like flirt with someone. And I was like, I just don't like this person. Like, I don't think I'm socially awkward. I'm just picky.
You're not at all.
Okay, thank you for reassuring me.
Okay, so now we'll get into the movies we'll be more passionate about. Our worst movies so far in the last 60 days. What is your worst?
Madam Web.
Yeah.
What was that movie?
Very pointless.
It was so dumb. Like, I have so many questions.
Starting with, keep it spoiler free.
WTF was the plot?
The plot is weird because it felt like the same thing over and over again of... Again, I won't give too much away, even if you go see it. It won't really ruin much for you. It's Dakota Johnson's character trying to figure things out and then leaving these girls behind. So in the movie, she discovers that she can see into the future, and then she's connected with these three other girls. And this whole time, they're just believing everything she says and going along with it, not questioning anything. And she's like, all right, you guys wait here. I'm going to go research some stuff. Leaves them there. And then later, she's like, okay, I'm going to go do this now. I'm going to leave you here. And it just kept happening over and over. It didn't feel like a superhero movie to me because really nothing heroic happened in the movie. There was no qualities of her character that had anything superhero related. It was really just her running around the city doing normal things. And then it had the worst villain of all time. And just the movie that completely was like, what are we watching the entire time?
Listen, no one has done... having visions telling the future. Quite like That's So Raven.
They should have just made a That's So Raven superhero movie.
Would 100% have been better. That's all I have to say about Madam Web. As my little brother would say, it was trash.
And the thing I wonder about that movie is, at what point did they realize that, oh, we have something really bad on our hands, and how are we going to save this and try to make a little bit of money off of it?
I mean, Dakota Johnson's press tour was indicative of it, because she was apathetic, uninterested. I don't even know that she knew what the movie was about, if we're being honest.
She really didn't, because she said that I have no idea if this movie is good or not because I was just on a blue screen the entire time. So it's almost what I've been saying is that the issue with superhero movies not really having that energy to them, those big moments anymore, is because the actors don't know what they are doing. They don't know how to act in those situations. With Dakota Johnson has been not really in movies that CGI heavy. She's used to interacting with characters in a setting that she can, you know, you're there, you visualize it. You see, like, I'm in this room right now. This is how my character is going to be. But when you take that away and you're just acting to people in a front of a blue screen, you're just getting all these plot points thrown at you and you don't really have a grasp on your character at all. It's just going to feel like a bunch of random things that you're going to hope in post they cut it just right for it to make sense or have any kind of.
And they didn't.
Gravity to your performance, and they didn't. So it's really comes down to how these movies are being made, relying on so much special effects and, you know, post-production, that you kind of got to go back to the basics of doing practical effects and doing things where the actor feels and can react to things.
The ending scene was so bad I audibly laughed.
It was very bad. One of the worst endings of all time.
And I've been seeing so many TikToks of people like really enjoyed laughing out loud for 2 hours with a sold out crowd at Madame Web. And I'm like, I love that it's brought us all together and that it was so bad and that we're all just like sharing in that experience, because bad movies and good movies are the same and that they're best shared in camaraderie.
I agree, but it has to be that level of bad to be enjoyable again.
Yes.
Because what my worst movie is wasn't that level of like, it's so bad, it's good. But with Madame Web, it did achieve that level that you could poke fun at it, you could make jokes and find some enjoyment in it because it was so off the wall.
All right, let's get into your worst.
My worst was Argylle.
So bad.
It was also just like 2.5 hours, which at least Madame Web was a shorter runtime.
I got sick of Argylle just from the 7,000 previews we saw of it.
Yes, they hyped that movie up so much, which is also an indicator. If a movie has a preview shown at every single thing, granted, we do go to the movies a lot, but when they spend so much money on advertising like that, you kind of think, oh man, I don't think the product here is actually worth it, and they're trying to make it up of just everybody knowing that this movie is coming out, and hopefully we make some money back. Now, after I did that review, it was kind of the opposite effect of when I reviewed Self-Reliance, is a lot of people said that I didn't get Argylle.
There was nothing to get.
I don't think so. Now, the movie, I understood what it was trying to do. It was trying to be this campy take on a spy thriller and be like quirky and over the top.
Plot within a plot within a plot.
Too many levels of it for it to really resonate.
And as someone who loves books and thrillers, I don't even want to read the Argylle book. I don't think there was anything to get. I'm going to agree with you on that. It wasn't even like campy. It was just dumb. It was a waste of money. Like, you could tell they spent so much. Like, the Apple film quality is great. Like, yeah, the colors are just like vibrant.
A lot of action sequences.
Dumb ones. Yeah. They weren't even good.
No, two of the worst scenes I've ever seen in a movie took place in Argylle.
Have we said what those are?
No. I mean, you kind of can, but it's too spoilery. Ugh, but it's just so.
I want to talk about one of them.
It's just so dumb. I keep calling movies dumb, but it is so pointless and it's trying to be so over the top that it's like, ah, this is fun. It's supposed to be that ridiculous. But I felt like the movie had a level of seriousness to it that you can't really do both at the same time. You can't try to be serious telling the story and then also have these supernatural elements that are so over the top. It just doesn't feel like it takes place in any one setting. So I wanted to leave that movie.
We did consider it, and then we were just kind of like, eh, I guess we'll stick it out.
Yeah, it got to a point of like, all right, I just want to see how this is going to end. And by the time it ended, I was like, yep, I was right. Wasted time. That was our best and worst. I did do some movie rewatches in the last month, and we'll go through some of these. One of them we did together.
The Titanic?
Yes, maybe a couple of them we did together. Titanic, which I don't even know how we got started on wanting to watch. I think we were just looking for a disaster movie, and technically Titanic is a disaster movie.
Yes, we were looking for something to watch while we played Scrabble.
And we watched Titanic, and first of all, I kind of forgot about the opening sequence. I think we both kind of did.
So long.
I remember watching it as a kid and just thinking that was like one quick scene of them getting into the story of Titanic, but it really was it's a big, significant part of the movie, probably like 20, 30 minutes of them finding her and all of the research guys trying to find and do all the backstory of the Titanic. I thought that was fascinating because I totally forgot about that part of the movie.
I would like to say kids these days do not know the struggle of having to change out the VHS.
Yeah. It is a long movie.
It is a long movie. Because what, VHS could only hold like 2 hours? So you have to change it out.
A double VHS to get the three.
That was
plus
luxury.
Hours.
That was awesome when you owned that double VHS.
But rewatching it, it just reminded me how many iconic moments are in Titanic. As far as like all the meme, like it's been 84 years, like all those little things.
We said it together.
There are so many things in that movie that are iconic that it's crazy to think a movie could even replicate that again.
Oh, it couldn't. I also think it was such a cinematic feat of like James Cameron to do something on that scale. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, even just watching the ship sink little by little. And I feel like it still holds up. Like some movies you watch and they like look old. I don't feel like the Titanic's ever going to look old.
Because it has a lot of practical things in it. Exactly. A lot of it is them actually building sets using real water. They do use some trickery where they actually have like a small model of it and they make it look bigger. So some of the scenes where like the water is crashing through.
Yeah.
It's a small scale, but a lot of it is actual sets. So that stuff ages so much better. That's why I always prefer movies to use practical effects. And I feel like a lot of filmmakers now think, oh, we have all this technology. We should probably use visual effects to make it look better.
They don't hold up.
They don't hold up. And I think that is a great reason why movies like that, even movies like Star Wars that use practical effects, have a more timeless feel. There are moments in Titanic, I think particular when like the smokestack things are falling down. Like some of that stuff is 90 CGI, but it doesn't take you that much out of it because everything else that's so big and elaborate is actual practical effects. I even saw the actor who's going to play the Thing in the new movie saying that, oh, the new Thing costume will probably be special effects because practical effects are so outdated. And I just felt like that what he said didn't hit well with me because I don't think practical effects are outdated. It's almost harder to do.
Yeah, I feel like it takes a special team to be able to put together better practical effects.
I think that is much more talent than, okay, we'll just put you in a suit and put some tracking on you and then we'll put it all in special effects. And then if it looks bad, everybody's going to hate it.
Yeah. But all that to say, Titanic, still a great film.
Still a great movie. The other movie I feel like we had watched it at some point, but then I don't think we did. We watched Geostorm because we were itching for a...
Yet again, a disaster movie. We were thinking of one on Hulu called what? Supercell?
Supercell. It looks like Geostorm. A dollar bin movie.
That one, the special effects are clearly special effects.
But I think even the worst disaster movie, I still find enjoyment in.
Oh, I've watched sci-fi disaster movies that are made on probably a $5 budget. I love a weather-related disaster film.
And Geostorm has basically all the cliche points of a standard
hit them all
disaster movie. It hits them all. And by the end of it, I was like, oh, that actually wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be because we ended up watching the movie we didn't think about.
Exactly.
But I don't really recommend that one. But if you're like us and are itching for a disaster movie.
Here's the thing. None of the good ones are free and streaming. I wanted The Day After Tomorrow.
Wasn't available.
We need to just buy it. We do watch that movie a lot.
We do watch it a lot. The other movie I watched that I was a little bit embarrassed to buy because I rented it was the Pokemon first movie from the 90s.
Can we tell people about this? So I'm going through our bank account and I see an Apple charge and we rented Anatomy of a Fall on Apple, but it was like $6. I was like, we have a $10.93 charge. Just trying to figure out what it was. You were like, huh, sure it was Anatomy of a Fall? I'm like, no, it wasn't. And you're like, I don't know. 5 minutes later, you were like, I rented the Pokemon movie. And I was like, why didn't you just tell me?
I haven't seen that movie since I was a kid. And I've been getting more back into Pokemon lately. Pokemon Day was just this past week. And I wanted to rewatch it. And there's nowhere you can stream it.
But why were you embarrassed to tell me? I went to two stores with you last week to find the Pokemon magazine. And I drove 30 minutes each way yesterday to buy you Pokemon Funko Pops. Like, I don't know why you were ashamed to tell me you rented the Pokemon movie.
I don't know. I guess it's just that I, like, of all the movies to pay for, it was that one, and it was, like, $4 to rent, and the movie is only, like, an hour and 15 minutes. And then, I don't know, I felt...
I don't judge you for your hobbies.
I know, I just feel childish watching it sometimes.
I literally get excited when they put a Mary-Kate and Ashley film on Hulu.
Those are good. Those go way back.
I watch Passport to Paris. Our lips are sealed. Nothing to be embarrassed about nostalgia.
I'm like heavily searching out nostalgia right now.
We go see kids' movies in theaters. We have tickets to Kung Fu Panda next weekend.
Can't wait for that one. But rewatching it as an adult for the first time since I was a kid was interesting because I remember that movie feeling so big. And I just remember being so excited to see it in theaters. I went with my brother. I got the card that came with your ticket. And then rewatching it, I was like, oh, this doesn't look as good as I remember. It doesn't really hold up as well because it feels a little empty to me, which I was like, oh man, I remember this movie being like nonstop action and like fast paced.
Well, how old were you when you saw it?
I was probably 8 or 9 years old.
Exactly.
It's just weird because at that time I was like, oh man, a Pokemon movie to see him more than 20 minutes at a time, which I was so used to watching the TV show. It felt so big and longer to me. That watching it now, I was like, oh, not a whole lot happened in this movie. And I also went and saw like the critic reviews when that movie came out, and they were like ripping that movie to shreds, which it made me think about like everybody who was an adult film critic now probably didn't get it. Like they probably hated the fact that a movie like that was making so much money. And when all these other movies are coming out that are more like film darlings, and then you have all these kids going to watch Pokemon, I just love now that those kids are my age and doing things like this now. And when a Pokemon movie comes out now, it'll probably get good reviews because it will be all those people who watched it as a kid and can appreciate it and be able to talk about it from a way of understanding it. Back then it was just like, this is dumb. This is for kids. This is garbage.
I also feel like we're in an era of reclaiming our hobbies and like the things that make us happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's cool to like own your hobbies and be proud of it. And if you enjoy Pokemon, great. Like, I don't care. I enjoy watching grown women on The Housewives yell at each other every week.
Yeah.
To each their own.
That was the other point I made of, I was thinking of how I feel kind of not ashamed of it. I just feel like it's a nerdy thing to like Pokemon, even though a lot of adults like it now.
Being a nerd is cool.
Yeah. I think the person who has made me be more comfortable with it recently was Miles Turner. Whenever he's the NBA player, plays for the Pacers, and he was talking about playing with Legos.
Building Legos.
That's what I was going to say. And for somebody like that who people...
I want his budget to buy Lego sets.
I know. Who people see like, oh, he's an athlete. He must be cool doing all these awesome things. And he's building Legos, watching Pokemon. He has a Miles Morales tattoo on his leg. And just to see somebody like that be into nerdy things and kind of be a spokesperson for it, kind of made me feel a little bit more like I should embrace it more.
I think we're also ingrained still like that train of thought in high school that like nerd is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like a pejorative term. Then you get to college. Honestly, being a nerd was cool in college.
Yeah. I mean, I do feel like
I was a nerd. I'm still a nerd. I read books. I read science books for fun. Like I sit at my desk and I have several books about like genes and like virology. I think learning and like having nerdy hobbies is cool. I hope our future kids have nerdy hobbies.
Because I was also thinking of in terms of other things I was a fan of as a kid that I'm still a fan of now that I love just as much is like, it's more socially acceptable for me to be as big of a Dallas Cowboys fan as I am. The reason I'm a big fan is because I grew up in the Dallas area in the 90s. I was surrounded by it. Like my earliest memories of watching sports on TV were the Dallas Cowboys. I don't think in any way that's different of me liking them now for the sake of it reminding me of my childhood, then liking Pokemon now or being such a big Spider-Man fan. It's really all the same. It's just that sports is seen as cooler, more manly, more, sports are more acceptable. And if you collect Pokemon cards, you're weird and a nerd. It's really the same thing.
No, it wearing truly is.
An adult man wearing an NFL jersey is, in my eyes, just as nerdy as a grown man wearing a Pokemon t-shirt.
I mean...
And both are acceptable. Do what you want.
You know my thoughts on fantasy football.
It's exactly...
grown man drafting a made-up team.
It is no different than playing World of Warcraft.
I don't think I've talked about it on here before, but my favorite podcaster, besides you, of course, mm-hmm. Kate Kennedy of Be There in 5, just wrote a book about like being a fangirl and loving pop culture and loving makeup and like just all the things that enjoy what you want to enjoy. If it's something nostalgic, great. If it's something nerdy, cool. If it's sports, like sometimes I'm just like, life is hard enough. Like it is hard to just be a human. And if you have something that brings you joy, go for it.
I think this has inspired me to go back and revisit more movies from my childhood that I haven't seen in a long time and not be afraid to watch them. I think the one I watched before this was probably Max Keeble's Big Move.
You did watch that.
Which was another one that didn't really hold up as much because I loved that movie as a kid.
None of those hold up.
It was one of the first movies that I got on DVD because I got it at the flea market. And I was like, I want to go watch, because I didn't see it in theaters, but I saw it on DVD. And I watched it nonstop because it was one of the only DVDs we had. And then rewatching it on Disney Plus, I was like, not as funny. No, not as really good.
But yeah, let us be a reminder. If you have any nerdy hobbies that you're like, it's not cool to like that, so what? Like, if there is something that brings you joy in the evenings or the weekends after working and just like paying bills and trying to be a functioning member of society, do it. I don't care what it is. If you want to make those like little things that you put beads together and like iron them together, if you want to paint, if you want to do puzzles all the time, like, cool. Sudoku, crosswords, read a book, bird watch. I don't know. Just if there is something that like brings you joy in this life.
As long as you're not hurting other people.
Yes. Do it.
Like, don't hunt for humans for sport. Probably not a good idea.
Okay. Thank you. I don't think anyone really thought that was their hobby.
Somebody may have been like,
I was really on my soapbox going there.
I'm going to follow my dream of hunting the human race.
Okay. Legal dreams.
Legal dreams.
Yeah, all right.
We always wrap it up with our honorable mentions with TV shows.
And a book.
And a book. I think collectively, the show we both loved the most was...
say it on 1, 2, 3?
1, 2, 3. Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I love Donald Glover. Probably have a bit of a man crush on him.
Probably.
He is my music, comedy,
he's just your muse.
Fashion.
He's just your muse.
He is my muse, so I'll watch anything he is in. And when it was first announced that he was going to be a part of a Mr. and Mrs. Smith series, I was like, that doesn't sound good to me. But after watching the first episode... completely hooked.
It was so good. I loved it.
Probably the fastest we've watched the show in a very long time of every episode. Just roll it. And yeah, they're like 40 minutes or so.
Every other show we've started, we're on like episode 3 and like 6 weeks behind. But that one, we were like, gotta watch it.
Same basis as the movie, but I feel like it works so much better as a series because every episode has its own mission.
Digs in a little more.
And it's so much more emotional and grounded in reality. I love the way that he acts in that. He has like this very... it almost feels like he's not acting because he's so chill and calm. And I just love the way that he speaks. It's like a normal human speaking and not acting, but he is acting. So
he's just so good at it. Your crush about Donald Glover now.
But a great show.
I feel like the movie is overshadowed by the fact that it's when like Brad and Angelina got together. That's what I associate the movie with.
Yeah, that overshadows it for me. But collectively, that is the best TV show we've watched. The worst show is one that I am not going to finish. You'll probably finish is Death and Other Details on Hulu.
Yeah, but it doesn't work every time we try to watch it on the Hulu app on TV, so I might not finish it.
The first episode was interesting.
The premise was good. It's kind of like a Death on the Nile,
Knives
Murder
Out
on the Orient Express, etc.
Visually, it's very colorful and fun. But it really lost me after that first episode of like, I don't really get what they're trying to do here. I'm out.
I honestly kind of forgot about the show, so maybe I won't finish it.
I did the Shark Tank. I'm out.
I'm out. For that reason, I'm out.
And your honorable mention book?
The Women by Kristen Hanna. It is almost 500 pages and I read it in 47 hours.
That is impressive.
I stayed up late 2 nights in a row and powered through. She does historical fiction really well. But unlike most of the ones I read, it is not World War II. It is set in the Vietnam War. And it is about a female nurse who enrolls in the army and goes to Vietnam. And it's about like the friendship she makes. And it's about trying to assimilate back into life in the U.S. after the Vietnam War. And just like the power of female friendships and just the power of like women in general. And it was fantastic. I think Kristen Hanna is one of the best writers. And interestingly enough, I don't even know if you knew this, the movie rights have already been purchased.
So oh, yeah,
it will
you told
be made into
that.
The film. And I think that'll be really good. She did an Instagram post and was asking people just like who they wanted to see cast. And Glenn Powell was a very common suggestion.
Like everybody wants him right now.
I can picture a character he'd be really good for. I think he could be good in it. So read The Women. It's fantastic. I'm very ahead of reading the book before the movie on that one. But yeah, that's my book recommendation. And then an honorable mention TV show would be One Day on Netflix. It's based on the book, and there was a movie in 2011 with Anne Hathaway, but it's 14 episodes. Some of them are only like 20 minutes. A little slow at times, but it's sweet. It's good. I stayed up late finishing it one night. I knew how it was going to end, and I still was like, okay, those are my honorable mentions. Oh, forgetting my favorite one. Kate Kennedy, One in a Millennial. Mm. I'm just going to plug her on this because I listen to her podcast all day long. Her book's fabulous. That's what it's called, One in a Millennial. And it's just about like girlhood and nostalgia in the 90s and Mary-Kate and Ashley and sleepovers and American Girl dolls. All the fun things.
There you go. We'll come back and give our review of Dune 2.
Did I or did I not like it?
And in the trailer park, we'll talk about Wicked.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Let's get into it now. A spoiler-free review of Dune Part 2, a movie that had so much hype built around it. Again, I don't go read reviews. I don't listen to reviews going into a movie. But it was hard to avoid all of the tweets and people posting in their stories of how much they loved it. But that's where I stopped going into it. But I knew that there was going to be more action in this one, just given the trailer, given what the director, Denis Villeneuve, who said that the first one was essentially setting up all the big action in the second one. And I was not a fan of Dune Part 1. Quite frankly, I found that movie to be very boring. It was a lot of walking in the sand. It felt like Game of Thrones in the desert to me, trying to build this big, elaborate world in just one film. For me, felt like too big of a task. So I wasn't that big a fan of it. I didn't hate it by any means because I still think visually it looked amazing. And the action that we did have towards the end of the movie had me excited going into this one. And really, I just wanted to see Timothée Chalamet ride a worm. I was all in it for that. And this movie has an incredible cast with Timothée Chalamet, Zendaya, Josh Brolin, Austin Butler, who did a really good job in this movie. They brought in Florence Pugh, Dave Bautista, who is proving that he can really do it all. And I love that he takes on every single role with so much just charisma and power, and he can do so many different things. And for, I know I compare him to The Rock a lot because they both came from the WWE, but The Rock will only do movies where he is the star. Dave Bautista will do roles in a big movie like this as a supporting actor and completely crush it, which I think is a great, great value to you as an actor. You don't have to be the star every time. And for that reason, I think he is winning in the game of WWE wrestlers turned actors. You also have Christopher Walken, Javier Bardem, which seeing him and Josh Brolin in a movie together gave me No Country for Old Men vibes. So I love the cast. I love the director, Denis Villeneuve, who has done movies like Blade Runner 2049, Sicario, and of course he did Part 1. So he is somebody who has a really big grasp on doing big action movies, big sci-fi movies. He also finds great cinematographers to make his vision come to life. Greg Frazier in this movie crushed it. And that is where I want to start, is the visual aspect of this movie. That first action sequence had me on my toes, and there were these really slick moments that were definite upgrades from part one that led me to believe that this movie was going to have so much more action and have a completely different profile than Dune part one, leading me to believe that the director wasn't lying and this is where all the action is going to be. So there are so many great things I can say about how good this movie looked visually. And I think where it really shined was the action. It had such beautiful explosions. I'm not sure I've ever described an explosion as being beautiful, but there were these big bursts of flames, and you combine it with the unique sound design that this movie had, that it had the theater rumbling. And this is a movie that, even if you're not the biggest fan of the franchise or the characters or the story, it still demands the big screen because of the scale of the sets, because of the scale of the action. And this is a very, very cinematic movie that I think seeing it in theaters is the only way to see it. But that being said, I don't think this movie is for everybody. And this is coming from me who, as a self-proclaimed nerd, I tell people that I'm into sci-fi. But this movie has me questioning whether or not I'm into this type of sci-fi. I think there are two different levels of nerds. One that's a little bit more fun, lighthearted, still nerdy stuff. And there's this more like refined, hardcore nerddom. The way I describe my nerd friends is I have some who are more into Star Wars and I have some that are more into Star Trek. If you are more into Star Wars, you might not be the biggest fan of Dune. If you're more into Star Trek, you probably love it. And I know what the comments are going to say is that Dune was essentially ripped off by Star Wars, which is a little bit more of a digestible, family-friendly, appeals-to-kids version of Dune. The book came out before the first Star Wars movie, so George Lucas pulled a lot of inspiration from Dune, and you can see that. So when I sit down to watch a sci-fi movie, a movie like Dune is one that I kind of need to spend more time with. And I know after watching this movie, it was by no means bad. I just feel like it's not entirely for me. I have trouble connecting with the characters and the themes in this movie, which there are very big complex themes. What it is about essentially is Timothée Chalamet's character trying to seek revenge against the people who destroyed his family. He teams up with Zendaya and her crew, and they are going into war defeating these enemies. And the overarching theme is him having to choose between the love of his life and the fate of the universe. He's having these visions of what is going to happen in the future. And then there's this other big theme that has a lot of religious undertones about what it means to have a messiah, what it means to be waiting for a person who is said to, you know, guide you, be your beacon, be the person you are going to follow. Those religious undertones, but really it is a story about good and evil, with Timothée Chalamet being the hero, Austin Butler and Dave Bautista being the villains here. And while I understand this, and I can already read the comments again of people saying, well, you just didn't get it, I understand all that. But the level of storytelling that it has, even though I'm understanding these plot points and following along all these characters, which it does take a lot of paying attention. This is a movie you really have to be dialed into, because if you miss one line, if you miss one little part, you may be confused throughout the movie. Even if you understand all the plot points, for me anyway, I had trouble connecting with the characters and really feeling the things that I normally feel in a movie of this scale. And that was even with this one having a little bit more levity to it, with Javier Bardem's character cracking some jokes here and there. There was a little bit more camaraderie, people poking fun at Timothée Chalamet. This one had a lot more of those elements that lacked in the first one. But it always comes back to that connection between the spice and the moisture that is so specialized to me that I don't really care about it. And that's probably my dumb brain of not wanting to grasp that concept or think it's that interesting, that I'm like, they're doing this all because of spice and moisture. So I was just trying to visualize exactly where this is taking place in the world and allow myself to fully be a part of that world. But there were things throughout that just took me out of it. And as much as I love Timothée Chalamet, maybe it's because I was coming off Wonka, I found it hard for me, probably unfairly, that he is the person for this role. And maybe it's just because of the way he talks. To me, he just sounded like Timmy Tim delivering some of these speeches and talking so just normally when everybody around him has a cool accent. They're speaking a different language, which his character did too. But I just found it to be like, oh, it's just Timothy Chalamet in there. So I think this is a movie in about 5 years, much like I did with Interstellar, that I didn't love the first time I saw it in theaters. But years later, after revisiting it, learning more about it, researching more about it, I understand that film and what it was trying to do and what it was trying to say. Same case will probably be here, and I'll look back and think, ah, I really got this review wrong upon my first reactions, but I couldn't come on here and tell you that I completely loved all of the storytelling elements and that I'm fully into Dune because I didn't really leave with that impression. In those first 90 minutes, if it would have ended there, I'd have came on here and given it a 4.5 out of 5. But after about that 90-minute mark towards the back half of Act 2 into Act 3, it got Dune-y again. And by Dune-y again, I mean it got a little bit boring. The dialogue started to feel a little bit more like a chore. And when all of these big epic moments start happening, I don't have that connection with these characters to really make me get riled up in my seat and want to cheer along. And maybe it's because my brain has been ruined by the MCU of expecting some witty catchphrase or some big heroic moment for something to pop to get me excited. I just didn't really have that feeling. And once it was over, I thought it went on probably 20 to 25 minutes too long. Probably unfair for me to say that hey, if it just made it shorter, it would have been better. But when it started to dip for me, it dipped pretty hard and I just kind of wanted it to be over. But I just know that there is such a big fandom for this movie of people who truly get it. Because if you look at the box office numbers in the United States, it made $81.5 million. Worldwide, it's almost $180 million. So the fandom is there. I just think there are two different kinds of nerds. Again, the more refined nerds who are going to love this. People who like sci-fi with big complex themes, a lot of characters, different languages. If you're more into like reading a book and then going to see the movie, this is all for you. But if you're like me that usually gets more invested in the emotional side of things, likes a little bit more action throughout the entire movie and not just a lot of dialogue of people speaking in these weird chambers, then you might find it to be a little bit boring and tedious at times. The one thing I think we can all agree upon is that cinematically, it is unmatched. This is how you do special effects. All of the action sequences were magnificent. Seeing Zendaya shoot these amazing guns, seeing all of the choppers, those little things that they would use to attract all of the worms. So the action and the visual aspect are amazing. So I still think you will enjoy that, even if you don't enjoy the other themes. So for Dune Part 2, I give it 3.5 out of 5 sandworms. And now that you've heard my thoughts, Kelsey will now give her uninterrupted feedback on Dune Part 2. Take it away.
I came up with the pun. I do not like it. It's bad.
Okay.
It's bad, but that's how I felt. It wasn't for me. I understand why people like it. I can see that it's like cinematographically really cool. Mm-hmm. You got a great cast. The color palette, just a lot of brown. Visually did not keep my eye. I understand it's desert.
I like the color palette.
Oh, I didn't. It didn't keep me going. Yeah, I think I probably should have rewatched the first one, but to be fair, the first one did put me to sleep.
Was boring.
So I was a little confused. Should have refreshed myself on what spice was, because the whole time I'm like, are we fighting over like paprika? Turns out spice is a hallucinogenic substance. I learned that last night on Wikipedia when I was like trying to understand. And I get that this book was in 1965, huge dystopian, really revolutionized dystopian novels. Maybe I'd like the book better, but it wasn't for me.
What do you rate it?
I mean, the cast was amazing. I'm going to give it 1.5.
Ooh, she went low, folks.
Yeah, and that is attributed to Zendaya.
All right, we'll come back and talk about Wicked.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
LASIK LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal, and may lose value.
It's time to head down to Movie Mike's trailer park.
I have always had this odd fascination with The Wizard of Oz. The original one from 1939, I believe, is one of the best movies of all time because it is a spectacle. And that is what I love about filmmaking movies that go to extreme lengths to make something look so cinematic. And I can only imagine what it would have been like to watch the original Wizard of Oz in theaters back in 39. There are so many elements of that movie that still watching them now, just realizing the technology or lack thereof they had back in the 30s making that movie, thinking of all the awful stories that are like this urban legend, but they actually happened, about the horrors those actors went through to make that movie. Judy Garland's life was basically ruined by The Wizard of Oz. People were burned, injured, later died as a result of the makeup they used in the process of making that movie. The lion wore an actual lion fur, and oh my gosh, all these crazy things they did to make these movies because they didn't have CGI. But we've been talking on this episode about the use of practical effects, and that is why that movie holds up, because you can watch it now, and yes, it does look like it was made a long time ago, but because they use so many practical effects and big sets, the movie still holds up, and that's why it continues to be such a fixture in American film. And now, this year, it is celebrating its 85th anniversary. 85th anniversary is crazy. So I've always had a weird place in my cinematic brain for that movie that I'll sit down and watch it, really just to study it. I don't know if I just love the concept of the movie, the songs in the movie. I think I just love it as a piece of movie history, so I like to watch it to see how exactly this came to be and the legacy it has left on filmmaking. But it also led to me to want to go see the 2013 version, Oz the Great and Powerful, that was the origin story of the wizard. James Franco played him in that movie. And the story was okay as a prequel, but what I really thought that movie got right with director Sam Raimi were the visuals. I thought that movie was very aesthetically pleasing to me. Didn't really cement itself in Wizard of Oz history, but I still think that is a pretty good movie if you happen to miss that one back when it came out, well, 11 years ago now. But with that being said, of me loving the original movie, loving the 2013 prequel, I am not familiar with Wicked whatsoever. I've never seen the musical. I've heard about as far as what the plotline entails. It is essentially the origin story of the Wicked Witch of the West. But everybody I know who has seen the musical says they love it. And obviously, I am missing out on something here. I am a fairly new lover of musicals, which, after talking to director Paul King and of the last couple musicals I've seen in theaters, I realized that I've been lying to myself for a very long time, saying that I don't really like musicals. I really do enjoy them, but for some reason, in our mind, we just think, oh, a musical is going to be lame. But since I hadn't seen this one, and knowing that throughout history of different types of iterations of The Wizard of Oz, they have been hit or miss, and they haven't done a live-action movie in a long time, since 2013. So I didn't really have the highest expectations for this movie. But after seeing this trailer and really getting a sense of the tone they're going for in this movie, but not only that, of how much this trailer honors that original movie and really how good the visuals look with all the cast members in this movie. Now, I am really looking forward to seeing this. So Wicked is coming out in two parts. Part one is coming out this Thanksgiving. It'll be followed up with part two, which is coming out November 26, 2025. So about a year apart. So what this movie is about, and again, if you're familiar with Wicked, you know all this. And if I get any details wrong, forgive me, because I am looking at this merely as the plot line of this movie without any real knowledge of the musical. But it is set in the Land of Oz before and continuing after Dorothy Gale's arrival from Kansas. And it centers around Elphaba, who is a green-skinned woman and explores the path that leads her to becoming the Wicked Witch of the West, all while forming this unlikely relationship and rivalry with Glinda Upland, who will go on to be Glinda the Good. In this movie, you have Cynthia Erivo, who is playing Elphaba, Ariana Grande, who is playing Glinda. You also have Jonathan Bailey, Michelle Yao, Ethan Slater, Bowen Yang, and Jeff Goldblum as the Wizard of Oz. So before I get into more of Wicked, here is just a little bit of the trailer.
The best way to bring folks together is to give them a real good enemy.
You're green.
I am.
Something is not the same.
Something just takes over me. And when it does, bad things happen.
Once you learn to harness your emotions, the sky's the limit.
I think this movie is going to be made with the cast. I think sometimes when pop stars get cast in a movie, it leads me to believe that the movie isn't going to be very good, because sometimes in musicals, they just cast somebody who has a major following and obviously somebody who can sing, but I feel like that is more oftentimes a marketing tactic than it is who can we get that is the best person to play this role. So when Ariana Grande was attached to this movie, I was a little bit hesitant because of that. Even though Ariana Grande got her start in acting on Nickelodeon, she hasn't really done a whole lot of movies that make me think of her as an actor before I think of her as a musician, which is fine. But again, I was just thinking, oh, they're going for somebody who has a major following, going for a big pop star, and hopefully we bank on the fact that her audience is going to come in and watch this movie and make it successful. I thought that was merely why she was cast in this movie. But after seeing her on screen as Glinda, it makes sense. And all the other members of this cast look fantastic. So this movie is based on the book that was later turned into the musical, which was really made popular back in 2003 when it debuted on Broadway with Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel. That is where all the success of this story came from. And this movie has been in development for a very long time, going through different directors and different cast members. And now we finally have the first look of it. And I think they got it right. The movie is based on the book that was turned into the musical. The premise of it, Glinda and Elphaba are students at Shiz University, where despite their differences, they form a relationship, navigate friendship, go through magical training, and even a little bit of romance while discovering their own identities. However, the world of Oz takes a turn whenever Elphaba is wrongfully deemed the Wicked Witch. So this part one and part two are going to show how she becomes the villain and her connections with the other Wizard of Oz characters. There's also going to be a couple new songs in this movie that were not featured in the play, which really, to me, all of these songs are going to be new because I haven't seen any of them. I am familiar with a couple just because Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth made those so famous that I remember those cutting over into the mainstream, but still nothing from Wicked is really cemented in my head of knowing all of the story's elements. So really what resonates with me from this trailer is there are a lot of shots that are odes to the original movie. Everything from the flying monkeys crashing out of the glass window to even the framing on some of these shots on Glinda coming down in the bubble, or the Wicked Witch of the West having that same kind of profile look in this trailer as well. It looks like they are very much playing into the cinematography that made the 1939 version so memorable and so iconic. And again, I think what is going to really make this movie is the incredible cast that they landed. Cynthia Erivo plays the Wicked Witch of the West. Ariana Grande plays Galinda. Michelle Yao plays Madame Morrible. Jeff Goldblum is the Wonderful Wizard of Oz. Jonathan Bailey is a prince who meets Elphaba and Glinda at school. Ethan Slater plays a munchkin who is in love with Glinda. Bowen Yang plays one of Galinda's college friends. So it is interesting that they are splitting this movie into two. I am hoping it's because whenever they tried to tell the story in one, they decided, oh, there's actually a lot more of the story to tell, and not a case of, oh, we could probably get more out of this movie if we unfairly split it into two and make people wait a year and get their ticket money again on the back end. Hopefully, that is not the case. I also thought it was cool that there is a scene where you see Dorothy, the Tin Man, the Cowardly Lion, and the Scarecrow for like a mere second. It's kind of them walking and it panning in behind them as they're walking up to meet the Wizard of Oz, which with the little research that I did, a lot of people were upset about that because, again, as I understood it, it's a prequel long before Dorothy gets there. So is that a way to bait people into thinking that Dorothy is going to be in this movie who are maybe like me, not too familiar with it? Also, in the description of part one and two, they are saying that part of the movie may take place after Dorothy's arrival, which I don't believe is in Wicked. So some true hardcore fans are probably a little bit upset about that. But for me, I would love to see at least just a little hint of that. As long as it doesn't take away from the integrity of the story, I just think the fact that it has been 85 years and it's coming out in the year of that anniversary is a pretty big deal. And if it's just a small little glimpse of it, nothing too overstated, doesn't take away at all from the legacy of Judy Garland, who deserves to be remembered forever as Dorothy Gale, I think I'm okay with it. Again, this movie is coming out this Thanksgiving with part two coming out next Thanksgiving. I think this will be a movie that's going to crush at the box office and definitely warrants the big screen.
And that was this week's edition of Movie Mike's Trailer Park.
And that is going to do it for another episode here of the podcast. But before I go, I got to give my listener shout out of the week. And last week, we had an interview with Paul King, the director of Wonka. If you missed that, just go back one in the feed and listen to that full interview. You can also watch it on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/MikeDistro. You can always find all those links in the episode notes of every single podcast. But every time we have an interview, I always give a secret emoji. All you have to do is comment with that emoji on Facebook, TikTok, or Instagram, or Twitter, and I'll pick one of those comments to be next week's listener shout-out. So this week, I'm going over to Facebook, and the shout-out goes to Denise Watson, who left a comment with the chocolate emoji and said, "Great job, Mike. I love hearing you geek out when you do some of these interviews. It reminds me that you are a real fan just like I am." Thank you, Denise, for that comment. And I think primarily when I do interviews now, I don't do them a whole lot. I like to do them when I am really passionate or a big fan of the project or the person. And I think that's because I owe it to you guys to do interviews that I'm actually looking forward to do, asking questions that I genuinely want to know the answer to, and not just doing interviews for the sake of doing interviews for somebody to promote a movie that I really don't care about. I think when that is the case, everybody wins. Whoever is promoting their movie, they get the great promotion of somebody actually asking questions that other fans would want to know. I get a lot out of it because I feel like I'm able to form a better connection with people who I'm actually a fan of their work. And then for you guys, I think that is the best quality that comes through the podcast, of hearing a genuine conversation between two people who actually have some respect for each other. So thank you, Denise, for hearing that come through in the interviews. That is always my goal here. So thank you. You are this week's listener shout out of the week. Thanks to everybody. Hope you have a great rest of your week. And until next time, go out and watch good movies, and I will talk to you later.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases, and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.